Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. We started this podcast because we believe it isn't the female celebrity making waves in this world, it's the moms tending to their toddlers while launching international nonprofits or nursing their baby while creating breathtaking art. Join the Mama Bear community where we support and encourage women doing big and bold things with their lives in addition to being great moms, and dare you to harness the power of your Mama Bear to live a life of love and compassion.
Hello, Leslie.
Hey, Tessie.
How's it going?
It's good. It's good. The family is on spring break, and we took a little road trip to the Lincoln Presidential Library.
So a spring break trip you guys would take.
Yeah, so it was just a quick 24-hour little excursion, but it was fun. The museum is fantastic, and we let the kids swim at the hotel pool. I actually, on the spot, almost did a special Mama Bear Dares broadcast from the swimming pool of the hotel.
You should have.
It was crazy. So we were there. It was a really small pool, and we have two okay swimmers and one who really can't swim at all but loves the water so much and totally thinks she can swim. So it's always exciting. We're always really having to closely lifeguard the pool when our kids are swimming. And so we were kind of on guard for drowning children. Like, it's terrible, but, like, you know, you have to really watch. And Sintayu, being the one that I'm referring to, she was just all over the place and having a great time. But, you know, it is spring break, and sometimes mm-hmm. those pools can fill up pretty quickly. And we, no kidding you, like, we legit saw two children almost drown. It was
what?
Terrible. Everyone was with the same family, tons of kids. It looked like sisters with all of their kids, you know, just like taking a break and letting the kids swim. And one kid, I mean, you could just tell. And Jake right now, he was in a swimsuit. I have to be
was
honest.
Was it his Speedo?
No, it was not
okay.
a Speedo.
Well, everything is fine.
That would be a different story. And I have to be honest with my mama bears and say that when I say that we took the kids swimming, like, I very much had my book and did not change into my swimsuit and was just sitting on the lounge chairs while everyone else was having fun. And Jake had his swim trunks on, and he did swim and hang out with the kids for a little bit. But he had like a little tear in his eye, so he's not able to wear contacts. So he's been using these eye drops, and, you know, his eye is healing, so he can't wear contacts, and he didn't want to have his glasses on because he was swimming with the kids. So we're sitting there kind of watching our kids. I was vigilant, but I was also kind of rooting. But
so not vigilant.
All of a sudden,
so not really.
All of a sudden, this kid's like really struggling, and I am a non-reactor in these situations. Like, I just freeze up. Mm-hmm. It's like time stops, and I mean, we've talked about this before, how, like, if we were in a movie, you would be the one, and, like, if a disaster happened, you would be the one, like, knocking people over to find the exit, like, the emergency exit, and I would just still be sitting there because I just freeze in moments of, like, you know, any sort of stress or distress. So I could see that this kid was really struggling, and Jake could not because he literally, like, didn't have his contacts in. And I could see that the moms weren't paying attention.
Oh, no.
And then eventually one of the moms was like, oh my gosh, and had, like, another older kid was like, go, 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 you know. And the older, probably like 12 or 13 year old, grabbed this little guy and pulled him out. But, like, it was awful. It was so scary. And so we kind of got over that, and Jake was like, I couldn't see anything. Like, he did, actually. He's borrowing Zach's copy of Purity, the new Jonathan Franzen novel. So apologies to Zach, but, like, when Jake finally realized, like, maybe, like he could vaguely see something was wrong, he dropped his book and jumped up, but like he dropped it, we were at a pool, so now it's pretty wet, and
right.
So Zach will have some rumpled pages to contend with there. But anyway, like 15 minutes later, same family, another kid like started to go under, and that this time a mom jumped up in her clothes, like she had all of her clothes on, and she had to jump in and grab her daughter. I just was like, oh no, you know, and this time I didn't see anything but the mom jumping in her clothes, and that's when I wanted to just
you should have had your headset, like,
your mama bear, man. Good work. Like, your mom just came out roaring. And you did it. So, I mean, it's not at all funny, and I don't want to make light of, like, how serious it is. Like, water is so scary and dangerous and also fun and wonderful. But
you
wow,
got
we
to
really
witness an actual mama bear coming to life.
I sure did. It was intense. So, that all happened in Springfield just this morning.
So, interestingly, that actually bleeds into our guest today in a really weird and random almost way.
You're right.
Right?
It so does. Yeah.
Yeah, because Amy Sievertson talks about risk tolerance in the podcast, and I've thought so much about that. The water is the quintessential, like, it's a risk. It's always a risk, isn't it? Even for those of us who can swim. I'm a lifeguard. Zach hates when I say that. I haven't been a lifeguard for years. But I still say I'm a lifeguard. But even I get still, you can understand the water. So, like, when I see kids running amok and no parental figure paying real attention, it just does, like, oh, gosh.
Well, yeah. And I mean, in this case, obviously the kids, there's something like so beautifully blissful about youth is that you didn't even recognize the risk. You know, like these kids were just going for it and not fully aware or so trusting in their own abilities that they just jump right in. But obviously, you're not always ready to do that.
I know. It's the combination of things. And that's where sometimes I feel like, gosh, I wish I still had that as an adult. Because Amy, to transition a little more, talks about starting new businesses and things like that. And how you have to some extent, believe in yourself, regardless of whether all of it's founded.
Right, like sink or swim. I mean, this is a thing.
Yes, it is a thing. But kids go head first, most of them. You know, we do have the caution, kids. But as adults, we think of everything that could go wrong, and it stops us. So one of the things Amy talks about is, like, trying to build that muscle of risk tolerance. Do you remember that when we were talking to her?
Yeah.
And let me first say, I do want to warn our mama bears that in the conversation with Amy, I sound legit crazy. I don't know what was going on with my mic. I don't know what happened, but I sound like I'm at the bottom of a pool trying to record with the world's oldest microphone.
It's true. Something very bad happened with your audio, and Amy and I were in the same room together, so ours sounds okay, but yeah, listening back, it's like you have two tones, like there's those Gregorian monks who can literally sing two tones at once, and I used to be fascinated by that and have spent some time trying to do that, and it, I mean, I'm not going to do it now, but it, I mean, it's, you sound like... Maybe everyone pushed pause and just give it a shot. I mean, two tones at once is tough
to accomplish.
I can
attest to the fact that normally I can't even hit one actual tone while singing, so this was not on purpose. It's just a tragedy, and, you know, the good news is I don't talk a lot in this podcast.
Right, that is true, but when you do, you either sound like a Gregorian monk or like a monster.
I'm going monk. definitely okay. all of the meditation in the morning has paid off.
Okay. so anyway, sorry, Mama Bears.
So there's that, Mama Bears. Just bear with us. Anyway, you know that I, as well as Zach and my siblings and parents, just got back from Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. We had a great time. And while there, I actually thought a lot about our conversation with Amy, specifically how she talked about her high tolerance for risk. I think in some ways I have a high tolerance, and in others I'm so totally adverse to any risk, specifically when it comes to physical actions. Like, Zach can tell you I'm a very cautious person. Heights, all of that, I always step back. So on the flight to the DR, I made a promise to myself to be more open to it, because it was like, if I know I'm not going to die, just do it, right? Mm-hmm. And it totally worked. I signed up to do some surfing, and I tried to do, now I can't think of what it's called, but it's like you're behind the boat, and there's a...
like a parasail? Parasailing? It's like,
is it parasailing when you're kind of attached to the boat? I don't know. Whatever it is, you're in the air...
Wow.
Like, on the precipice of death, it looks like. Not really. Neither of those actually ended up panning out, but it wasn't because of me. It was because of the timing of when they were offered. But I was all in, and Zach was shocked, as were my parents and anyone who knows me. And I jumped into this natural pool that was 20 feet deep with no hesitation. I embraced a mud-soaked dune buggy ride. I mean, it was just awesome. I just went full into it thinking of Amy in the conversation, and it turned out great.
That is fantastic. I'm proud of you for doing those things, or at least for signing up for some of those things, too. But just for kind of to open your mind and, you know, be encouraged by what Amy was talking about. I loved how you actually said it was... that risk tolerance can possibly be like a muscle that we can flex at times or like that we can nurture to grow. So I think that's really cool. And I mean, a dune buggy or whatever it is, like you start doing those things, right? And then eventually you just become more comfortable with that. Maybe you start to trust yourself more.
Right.
So that's really cool.
I know. So what about you? What about Amy's conversation has you kind of evaluating and shaking up your normal routine?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about it a little bit just in terms of risk. And I think that every time I put this headset on to talk to you for the podcast, or really when we push record, that feels like a bit of a risk because, you know, I'm like, gosh, will we seem foolish or will I say something silly or ignorant, you know? And I think that's true just any time you create something and push it out into the world, whether you're speaking or writing, whatever it is, there is some inherent risk to that. And so I feel like that's how risk is playing in my life right now. Since our conversation, I don't know that I've flexed my risk muscle as much, especially in the physical scape. But I would say this podcast feels like a new kind of challenge and risk.
Yeah, and you've got plenty of flexing happening with the Creative Collective as a new business venture as well. So I think you're flexing pretty hard right now. Just might not be fully aware.
That's probably true. I was not flexing my risk muscle at the pool in Springfield this morning.
Or maybe you were because you were fully clothed reading.
That's true. That is true.
That okay about your non-swimmer kids being.
It's true. And usually, you know, when we've traveled before together, you know how I like to pretend I'm a fun mom and be like, "Fun mom, look, I'm getting in the pool." And today I was just like, "Eh, I'm not that fun." But the other part of Amy's conversation that actually I've been thinking a lot about is when we talk about just listening to your gut, like literally she talks about having to make a decision because she was literally sick. Mm-hmm. Like her stomach, she talks about how her stomach was in knots because of a circumstance or a situation that she was in. And I just thought that was so interesting that our bodies, like you had pointed out, our bodies often are the first thing to indicate that something is wrong.
Yeah.
That we need to listen to that.
Right. Well, I love kind of natural medicine and health through diet, nutrition, that kind of thing. But as you know, a couple years ago, I started going to an acupuncturist, which was the first time I've ever done that. But we just moved to Michigan. It's almost 2 years exactly. And I remember one of the first things she did when she was just doing her kind of overall look at me, she said, "Oh my gosh, you have so much sadness." And I was like, "No, I don't. I'm totally fine. Everything's fine." And she's like, "You can ignore it if you want, but your body is harboring a lot of sadness." And of course, I was sad. We had just moved from all of you guys, our friends, our family. But it occurred to me then, and that's been almost 2 years ago, that, like, my goodness, she's feeling that radiate from my body. And I genuinely believe that that's true. I mean, stress can give us ulcers, it can give us a heart attack, it can do all of these actual physical things. So it made total sense that she was feeling that, because our physical body takes the brunt of our emotional and spiritual illnesses, really. Mm-hmm. And I know yours does that. I know yours does that.
I know. Yeah, my body betrays, the body betrays. No, it's true. I think you're talking about, like, when we're in the thick of the water party that we throw, it's probably one of the most beautiful but also the most stressful times of year. Mm-hmm. And, like, notoriously, the week before, I have no appetite. So I
just can't. Except for coffee.
Yeah, I drink coffee like a maniac for 7 days, and it's terrible. I mean, you know, it keeps me up at night. It's like, but it's shaking all the time. But I just, you know, the thought of food is just gross, and that definitely. I mean, my body wears that stress of the mm-hmm. week. Like, I'm clearly feeling the, you know, just all of the emotions of getting to work with my friends, and then the heaviness of what we're doing, you know, that people are without a basic resource in so much of the world, and just all of that, I think my body takes on and mm-hmm. and replies in that way.
And I think that that's the easiest thing for people to overlook, unfortunately. We get used to just this baseline of illness. So it's totally not uncommon for us to have a stomach ache and for us to maybe have constipation, whatever it might be. And so we don't even see that as, like, our emotional or our spiritual trying to tell us, like, hey, take it easy, move mm-hmm. on, this is no longer good for you. We just learn to live with that kind of, you know, gross feeling, which is too bad, because we need to, especially mama bears, I think, need to start to learn to recognize some of those signs, because they're early signs.
I don't think we're used to, as a culture, kind of making the connection between our mm-hmm. physical health and our mental health. So even when, you know, you're talking to a friend and you're just like, gosh, I just have not had an appetite. Like, I don't know what's going on with me. You know, in the same breath, you might say, I am so stressed at work, like, I am dealing with this whatever, and, like, we're just so slow to put mm-hmm. those two things together. We don't even necessarily realize the connection, and let alone pay attention to it, and then use that as an impetus for change.
So true.
Yeah, so I think that was really interesting when Amy actually, she is very in tune with how she was feeling physically and realized that it wasn't necessarily a physical health issue. Mm-hmm. It was more of a mental response to where she found herself in life.
Yeah, and then she did something. I mean, that was the mm-hmm. coolest part, was then she quit. And she did something yep. that nourished her soul, as opposed to kind of continuously feeling like crap and, you know, not doing anything about it. So that was really cool.
Yeah, It was, and that it was a pretty small part of our conversation, really, mm-hmm. but it's definitely something that has made me just consider the times in my life where, like, gosh, you know, it's funny how when I get really nervous, I also get a really bad headache, or, you know, right. I mean, mm-hmm. just what are the times in my life? Like, last week, I had, like, for 2 days, I had this really random headache, and I don't really get headaches all that often. And so it made me think, like, okay, what else is happening? Like, what else has changed? Is there some sort of emotional stress? Is there some sort of stress that's happening? You know, where could this be coming from? Not necessarily, that might not necessarily be, you know, a physical illness, but just right. a manifestation of something that is going on inside my heart.
Good for you for evaluating that. You know what I also took away from her conversation that I really loved was, I think you asked her, when you make a decision, who do you consult, whatever? And she's just like, oh, I just make it and let it go. And I thought, oh my, you do that? People do that? Because I'm so the kind of person that just stays up at night and I worry about it. And then I'll make the decision and I'll still stay up at night mm-hmm. and worry, was it the right decision? Was it the wrong decision? Should I redo something? And I just thought that was the coolest thing, that she can just let it go.
Yeah. Yeah, that is amazing. She does. She says she makes a decision and then she can kind of turn it off and just live with it and just be at peace with that decision. She clearly trusts herself. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably part of that, is just knowing, like, hey, I've made great decisions in the past. And this one's good too, or I've made terrible decisions in the past and I've lived to tell the story.
Yeah.
You know, I think that when making decisions, like, you can decide and then you own it and then you just don't look back from it. And when Jake and I purchased our first home, I remember, cause my process is similar to yours, just mm-hmm. that kind of the brooding and the thinking and the analyzing and the overanalyzing. But we did it. We felt great about this house. It was in our budget. Everything lined up to work out really well. We signed the papers, and I remember going back to his parents' house where we had lived with them for a month. And I remember his dad just being like, all right, you made that decision, now stop. Just stop. Like, you really? Can't. That's a big one. Don't overthink that one. Mm-hmm. Like, you just did it. You made a good decision. You can't look back now. And I think just having someone say that, I was like, yeah, you're right. I can't look back. And to this day, I still drive by our house and I'm like, oh, I can't believe that's our house. Like, I love this house, mm-hmm. you know? And I just refuse to drive by and be like, I think we made the right decision, you know, because really right. 7 years later, I could definitely be doing that. But no, like, we made the right decision.
Yeah.
I'm not going to look back. Like, that was a good decision. And I was also thinking about just how, when you do make a decision, just taking it through to the end and realizing that probably you're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. When my kids are, like, Oliver is almost 12, and, like, I've helped him make some decisions of just, like, okay, what's the very worst thing that can happen? Like, let's go to that point, and then we always figure out that it's even the worst thing that can happen, we can get through. Mm-hmm. And so I think Amy probably just embodies that. Like, she knows with every decision that she makes, like, she can take it to the end. It's going to be okay.
Right. Right.
She has the resources. She has the family. She has the, you know, the intelligence to make it through anything.
Yeah. And obviously, this podcast is all about the mama bear inside all of us, whether you're a mom or not. And we all have the ability to make it okay. I mean, mm-hmm. there's something to be said of the journey. You know, I think often when about the move, how even after we moved here for a while. I was just like, terrible mistake. What are we doing here? And then you get to the point where it's like, no, it wasn't a terrible mistake. It wasn't everything I thought it was going to be. But now we're here and we're going to embrace this. Mm-hmm. So there's something about the journey, but I think there's also something about acknowledging that inside each of us is somebody capable of way more than we ever give ourselves credit for. So even when things seem insurmountable, whether it's starting a new business, starting a podcast, or having kids, or whatever it is, to know that, like, oh, I'm capable of even more. When I take it out to its fullest, I'm capable mm-hmm. of even beyond that.
Well, yeah, and I think, too, just, like, you can look at the things, and really terrible things can happen. Mm-hmm. Terrible, you know, you can talk about losing a job or losing a person, and those are really awful things, but I think still the capacity, the human capacity to overcome and to find hope again it's in all of us.
Yeah.
I truly believe that.
I do, too. What do you think? Are you ready to unleash Amy on our mama bears?
I think so. I think they're going to love her and enjoy your crazy audio.
Oh, I know they'll enjoy the crazy audio. Awesome. Well, let's get into the conversation.
Tessie, we're here today with Amy Sievertson, and I'm so excited. Hi! So, I introduced Amy a little bit in a previous podcast, but she is my business partner. So we opened the Creative Collective in downtown Davenport last summer. It actually opened in November, but we started working together in the summer, and it's crazy how, you know, people can quickly enter your life and then go from being someone from afar or even a stranger to the person that you text 10,000 times. Right. Every mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what has happened with Amy and I. We opened this business as really business partners, and we've become fast friends, which was really great. So we met through a mutual friend, and let's see, Amy is mom to two, and she actually, I hope you don't mind saying, okay, so she's having a baby. She's having a baby in August, and the reason I paused for a second is because I love to tell people that Amy's pregnant, and I don't always ask, like, if this is an okay thing to bring up, like, at a business meeting, so.
That feels important to get her okay with that, yeah.
Yeah, so she is having a sweet new baby, Sievertson, very soon. She has a heart for service. She does a lot of work with Young Life, the organization. You might have heard about that, working with high school and college youth. She's been just a tremendous role model to a lot of young people through her work with Young Life. And she also leads this trip, like a learning kind of service trip, to Doulos Discovery School in the Dominican Republic. And so she and her husband, Andrew, have been really active in that community and just in sharing that mission with others. She used to be a runner, and now for all the CrossFit mamas out there, Amy does CrossFit. And when I met Amy last summer, I was really intrigued by her because she was definitely in this period of kind of waiting and in redefinition. She was newly 30, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd.
I'm still 30.
Okay, she's so young. No, she was 30, and she had been running this really successful sales contract. So from the outside, I felt like when I first met Amy, she had just all of the trappings of being this huge success. But I think as I got to know her a little bit, I learned that despite all of the comforts that having this really lucrative job held for her, Amy was not terribly happy doing it at that point. Mm-hmm. And so she had ended the sales contract, so basically quit her job,
And jumped into this period of just unknown. She wasn't really sure what she was going to do next. And that's when I pitched the co-working space to her. And now I text her 20,000 times a day. So anyway, I thought we should start just by talking with Amy a little bit about that period of her life where she had just ended the sales contract. So kind of set the scene for us, Amy. Tell us about just the draws to the job, the advantages, and then why you decided to walk away from it.
I got in the contract to help. It was a contract that my parents actually ran first, and they needed some technology help. And so I got in to do that. And so that was, on the one hand, it was really great because I was able to learn a lot from my parents who have been entrepreneurs for 20 plus years. And I learned a lot about just customer relations and the importance of that. But what wasn't great about it is that I went to my childhood home to work.
Like the basement, right?
The basement of my childhood home, because it was a home office. And you know, while your parents are great and they're wonderful, having them as coworkers and spending a majority of time in a work setting with them was challenging at times. I did end up transferring a lot of my work, since it was technology, to my home office. But I just felt I had a lot of that. I felt alone a lot, even though I did a lot of communications, mostly email with customers and prospects. I sat in an office by myself and didn't really have anyone to turn to or talk to. I couldn't go to a coffee shop as much because I had a lot of sensitive information on my computer.
Right, because you were running, it was a tax software business.
Yes, and we dealt with just even taking orders, a lot of really sensitive numbers that shouldn't be displayed on a computer screen in a public place. And so there was just the demands of the industry. The tax industry was changing. We were dealing with a lot of disgruntled and unhappy customers, and it just wasn't necessarily life-giving anymore.
Well, and your parents, too. Like, your dad had had some health issues, right? And so you were kind of, you know, this young professional dealing as a professional and as a daughter with a dad in particular who had been struggling a little bit with his health.
Yeah, so I did get involved more when he had had a seizure and had some brain cancer, and so I needed some time to recover, and so I was able to fill in for some of the couple years that it took for him to recover. And then he fully recovered, and we had our separate roles and complemented each other really well.
Okay. So yeah, what were some of the advantages of working on that contract?
I learned a lot. I learned how to run a business, how to do the books, how to talk to customers, how to email professionally. We made a lot of money. And that was nice.
Yeah, it sounds like you were, you know, making more than we are right now at co-working.
quite a bit more.
Which I think one of the reasons I was most interested in hearing from you too is that, I mean, I know, obviously, being married, that it would be so difficult, no matter how kind of stressful and hard a job is, if it were helping our bottom line or it was doing those kind of things, it'd be really hard to give it up. So I was really curious about what led you to make the decision to stop. Was there one thing? Was it all of the kind of cons that you just listed there, the small drawbacks added up?
I feel, yeah, there was a lot of stress trying to find childcare. I had a very flexible schedule, and so it was kind of, I had one leg in the stay-at-home mom world and one leg in the working world, and so I felt like it was difficult to get people to take my schedule seriously. And so that was a challenge there. I also had just done a lot of, I don't know if I had read a book or just done a lot of soul searching, in that I didn't really desire a life of living in excess. Mm-hmm. And while we weren't millionaires or anywhere close at all, we were just able to spend freely and consume. And that started weighing pretty heavily on my conscience. And it just, I think the stress of everything, just the demands of the industry and of our customers, and the stress of trying to find childcare and take care of my kids, and, you know, just that discomfort with only being concerned with the financials,
right,
kind of all led to that decision that I wasn't enjoying my job enough. Maybe I wanted to spend some more time with my kids or find something else to do.
When you're making this sort of life-changing decision, and maybe it's happened more than once for you, I think all of us kind of have crossroads in our life where we know that, like, okay, I'm about to make a decision that's going to change everything, mm-hmm, at least for a while. So in general, when you make these sort of decisions, how do you make them? Do you, like, make lists? Do you research? Like, do you, what's the process of that like for you?
I think it depends. For this particular, to not continue with this sales contract was probably more focused around my health and well-being. Like I mentioned, I was really stressed. Also, I was really grumpy. It was pretty short and quick, yelling at my family all the time, and my stomach was hurting a lot.
Interesting.
And so I think that I just kept trying to get to the bottom of a lot of that and just realized, like, you know, things had to go. I think a lot of times when I make major decisions, it's usually based on my gut,
mm-hmm,
and how I feel. And I tend to be, I'm a pretty decisive person. So if I make a decision, I learn to live with the consequences, mm-hmm, and just move on. And sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not. But this one was a good one.
So how has your family benefited from you making that kind of bigger decision? Because obviously, I mean, I want to make a note too that you didn't go from a lot of work from the big sales contract stressful job to no stress. You created the Creative Collective. So there is still some stress, but this sounds like more like good stress. So what does the family feel?
I like a challenge. And so I can't say that there are definitely times when maybe it is stressful at the Creative Collective if we're, you know, you can let yourself go down a rabbit hole of negativity and that creates it, but it's challenging still. And so the challenge is thrilling and is uplifting. I think my family has benefited a lot just because I have stopped yelling. I think I was able to be more adaptable, flexible, and patient, and didn't have this looming over my head. I ended the contract in April. Pretty much, I mean, a lot of the work stopped in the middle of March, just because that's the heart of tax season. And so I had a good period of 5 to 6 months of just really not doing anything,
mm-hmm,
and just relaxing and focusing on my kids and spending time with them. And that was really important for our relationship.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it was, we all feel kind of those Sunday night blues, or I don't know, at certain points in our life, I think that we feel those. I mean, I really love what I'm doing right now. I mean, podcasting and co-working. It's still pretty great. So I don't experience those. I feel like I've personally kind of hit my, like, man, this is all working together. I love this stuff. But it sounds like you had, like, way more than the Sunday night blues with this particular contract. And it was, you were able to recognize it and then jump ship, really. I mean, make the best decision for you.
Yeah. It was constant frustration with my job when I had to do it. And so I'd find myself, you know, avoiding or procrastinating, which just, I mean, that's just my nature in general, but, or not avoiding, but procrastination. but it was getting to the point where it was actually really stressful. But yeah, I mean, it was just, it was affecting my health, my mental well-being, mm-hmm. and my physical well-being. My stomach was in constant knots. And so,
yeah, it was time to listen to that for sure, it sounds like.
Yeah, and it was a very hard choice.
Right. I think that's something the mama bears need to take out of this. Obviously, number one, that's kind of a privilege to be able to say, oh, I'm going to stop this lucrative job. I mean, there's privilege in that, so mm-hmm. we acknowledge that. But also just how important those little signs, when your body is telling you this isn't right by tying up your stomach, by making you physically ill, you've been mentally exhausted and emotionally exhausted for far longer than that. When it comes to physical symptoms, they've been manifested before that for a long time. So I think it's really important for our mama bears to listen to that too. And I just applaud you for taking action, because most of us just wait too long and then we're kind of stuck. We've lost our ability or our kind of mama bear instinct to make a change. And you made a change relatively quickly. So I think that's pretty impressive. And I hope our mama bears get that kind of courage out of this conversation too.
So earlier you were talking about just not being very comfortable with just that level of consumption that you were able to, I guess, engage in. So just talk a little bit more about that aspect of making this decision. How have your physical comforts kind of changed and shifted? And are you now feeling free because you have less to spend?
I think it was more... It wasn't necessarily the physical consumption that was super noticeable. It was probably more my mindset and my attachment to the idea of consumption. I mean, we were able to put a down payment on a larger house and then buy a car. And so those are two huge things. So we didn't necessarily accumulate a ton of stuff just because we bought really large items. But, you know, I think we just had to cut back more maybe on our lifestyle. We don't go out as much with friends, or when we do, we're very conscious about where we go and how much, you know, the restaurant costs. Or, I mean, a lot of reason why we don't go out now is probably more because we're tired. But I can't say that I'm like, oh, stress-free from it. It's, you know, each month when we review our expenses, it is a little stressful and sometimes disappointing to see, oh, like I used to be able to spend this much on groceries, and, you know, I have to be more conscious about every single decision I make. But I think all in all, it was still worth it, because the time is more important to me. You know, time is money. And so when you have time to be able to spend with people that you want to, or, you know, take a walk, or, you know, just not be thinking about stuff that stresses you out, it's, you know, creating some sort of capital.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's partially countercultural, but there is a movement happening, I think, where people are stepping back from kind of the rat race and saying, you know what, it's more important that I'm happy, that I'm not yelling at my kids, that mm-hmm. I have the energy to love my husband at the end of the day, or my wife. Maybe it's kind of our generation, I'm not sure, but we no longer see that as a luxury. We see that as a value that we kind of seek and pursue.
Right. And I do think, I mean, as you noted before, Tessie, that we should recognize that again for our mama bears out there, that like that is a really privileged place mm-hmm. to be, that we, you know, for whatever reason in this life, we're able to go to college or to pursue some of these things that we have the energy to do because we didn't spend 12 hours on our feet.
Right.
So again, I just want to make sure that we recognize that, but also that when we come to any sort of discussion of our mother self and our other self, if we come from that place of kind of a bit of privilege, really, we want to make sure that we are responding to that by using our energy to lift others up.
Right.
I guess is all I wanted to kind of interject there. And I know that Amy is great about that. Obviously, we spend a lot of time together, and I've just seen her over and over just offer a hand in many, many different ways. So Amy is a really creative person, and one thing that she does is create business, really. I mean, you're an entrepreneur for sure. So I'm curious just to learn a little bit more about where that came from, that sort of spirit that you have.
Some of it is probably just how I was born and genetic and part of my DNA. I learned a lot from my parents and watching my parents and just some of their, you know, from their political beliefs and why they believe a certain way, especially fiscally and, you know, financially, to just being out there and being really conscious of the business world and what it takes to be a business owner, run a business, and do that. They learned a lot from that and just being able to have good ideas and to make those be worth something.
Mm-hmm.
And so watching them and just through discussions with them, I've learned, I think maybe that is just how it shaped that in terms of creativity. I'm an idea person, and so I hear an idea and I get really excited, and like all of a sudden my brain just starts flying with different possibilities of how to make that idea come to fruition. I'm not always the best at putting those into actual action steps, but that is something that I've had to consciously develop over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And still working on.
We have no interest on Mama Bear Dares to get into like the mommy wars of stay-at-home mom versus working mom. So this podcast really isn't about you being a working mom. It's about nurturing your other self by creating these business ideas, by having the boldness and the audacity to take an idea that comes to you and run with it and see how it happens. And I love that spirit, really about cultivating that part of you. And so I feel like because my dad is a bit of an entrepreneur, that takes risk, and it takes someone who has a little bit of a higher tolerance for that. So do you feel like that explains you and describes you well, just a high risk tolerance?
Yes, I have a higher, it is measurable. Because my husband is a financial planner, they do a lot of quizzes for this, and it's something I do for their clients to find out how their level of risk tolerance, and so I scored pretty high on there, and I'm not exactly sure why it's that way, other than maybe just my growing up experience, and like I said before, watching my parents and listening to their conversations and the conversations we've had with them. Probably, you know, I think some of it could be just a level of faith too, just being able to not worry about stuff, just being able to trust that things will work out. I mean, I don't think that they're going to be always work out for the better, or that it's going to be easy. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, in the bridge isn't always in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
It could create stress and be awful. And I can look back and say, oh, maybe I should have done something about that, or worried a little bit more, but it doesn't change my going forward. I don't seem to change and become less risk adverse.
So having this high risk tolerance, in what ways does that make your life or the lives of the people who kind of surround you? How does that make it uncomfortable in ways, certain ways?
Well, my husband is not as risk tolerant as I am. He does like the safer road of things. Not that he has a certain level of risk. Financially, I definitely am more nonchalant about things. Oh, it'll work out. And so that can be really stressful, because I can start maybe taking some of his questions. He has more specific questions of, you know, maybe where some dollars had gone or why this was spent this way. And I will say that I can be quick to take that personally. And so, you know, that just can create, obviously, dissension. That's one of the largest problems between couples is finances. Because everyone has different spending habits. But, and I think, I don't know, I think maybe how it can create, it can be challenging for just all of my various relationships is people might want more reassurance about decisions coming up, and I maybe don't offer it as well because I'm like, it'll work out, it'll be fine without concrete evidence that it will. just trust that it'll be good. And if it's not, we will work on that when it happens. And so maybe then it becomes harder to convince people.
Yeah.
And so then I turn into this overconfident, and then I might start saying things that aren't true.
Well, how does that approach kind of make life more beautiful for you and those around you?
Every once in a while, I think I do notice that maybe because I'm not worried about something or I'm not fretting or worrying about where it will go, that they kind of creates a sense of calm for whoever I'm around. Not necessarily their worry goes away, but at least for that time and that moment, it can be less intense, depending on what it is, whether it's finances or kids or whatever, you know, it'll all just work out somehow at some point. 10 years down the road.
Hey, long game. That's fine. As you were talking and the idea of kind of your husband being more risk adverse than you are, do you think that a high risk tolerance is like a muscle? Can you flex it? Can you make it, you know, your risk tolerance higher for people who maybe have the entrepreneurial spirit and that they're constantly generating ideas, constantly thinking of new business ventures that would be really cool, but then they're risk adverse. Then they're like, no way, this is not worth it. Or they talk themselves out of it. Could we flex that muscle and make it bigger?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. You know, you talk to any huge, big name entrepreneur and they will talk about, you know, that inner voice or the contradictory voice. And it's just almost a matter of learning how to ignore it or tune it out. And I think that takes a level of control over your own emotions and thinking habits. Overthinking is the biggest device to anybody willing to take a step anywhere. And so being able to shut it off. I don't really like a lot of negative emotions, or especially sadness or worry. And so for some reason, I've always been able to just shut it off and not deal with it, which, you know, maybe isn't always a good thing, because sometimes it all manifests itself into anger. That's a little harder to control, for me at least. But I think that it just, you have to, you know, really practice of, you know, recognizing that you have a negative thought, but not letting it go anywhere else, especially if there's something you want to do. You know, and I think that it's not always necessarily about business or business decisions. It could be about, you know, like somebody wanting to, you know, start a blog or have social media, and they start freaking out because they don't know how are they going to be portrayed. And it's a matter of being able to put those concerns aside.
Well, and I think surrounding yourself with other high risk tolerant people is really important too, so that if your husband is less so and your best friend is less so, you're only going to get the feedback that tells you, seems too risky. But if you surround yourself, I mean, that's why there's Rotaries and there are those kind of places so that you can enter into conversations where other people are both taking risks and have learned something from their failures as well.
So I think all of us are busy in lots of different ways. How do you protect the time that you want to give to your priorities? What's your method of kind of keeping certain time sacred?
I keep a calendar. I like have a visual of a calendar of time blocks, and I will say no or offer ideas if something comes across that. I will also, I think a lot of times, I have just noticed in some interactions with moms lately that they're afraid to prioritize when it's something maybe other than their children. There's so much guilt, and I think that is something I just don't allow myself to feel, just because, maybe because I've had this experience of having, you know, being so drained mentally, emotionally, and physically, and seeing how it made my family react, and then being able to feel better, and then how my family was with that. That I think that having quality time with my kids, even if it's only a few hours a week, is so much better for all of us than feeling guilty that I'm not spending all this time with my very young children. And I think a lot of moms maybe feel guilty either about not spending enough time with their kids or prioritizing something else over their kids, or you know, or the opposite, feeling guilty for not working because they're not maybe providing financially. But I think that, you know, when you prioritize, obviously something is more important than something else. And so that allows room for feeling guilty to come into it.
Well, I think there's a reason for, on airplanes, they tell you to put your mask on before you put your kid's mask on. And moms don't understand that creating and nurturing your other self is that mask. And so maybe, you know, when I was in the thick of being a stay-at-home mom, it was as simple as reading a book, or it was as simple as having a conversation with a friend where I shut the door and made my kids stay out, you know, where I could just focus on the conversation. So it doesn't have to be creating a business. But what I hear you saying is just that, is saying prioritizing something that fills me up actually helps my family as well. And I think that's something the mama bears really need to hear. And not that it needs to be, like I said, creating a business. Go get yourself a book. Go get yourself, paint your nails, do whatever it is. But prioritize some part of that other self so that it, your family reaps the benefits too.
Fantastic, Amy. Thank you so much for this interview. Thanks for being a part of the Mama Bear Dares podcast.
Yes, thank you.
Great having you this morning.
Well, thanks for having me. It's fun. You two are fun to talk to.
Thanks.
Thank you. Mama Bear, today we have a special dare for you. We dare you to test your tolerance for risk and to stretch it, even if it's just by an inch. Simply engage in a conversation, even though there's no guarantee that it will go well. Start researching your new idea and reach for it, even though you might take a loss. Or quit something that's making you feel sick with worry. Wear something weird or vintage just because you want to, even though it might turn heads. Wrangle your mama bear spirit and pour it into doing something daring and something beautiful.
Oh, I love that. Thanks so much for listening, mama bears. We appreciate all of you. We are so grateful for the support we've been getting on our social media channels. And Leslie, I just want to read this one review from iTunes quick because it's just so great. And it's from a guy.
All right. I can't wait. I love it.
He says, "This podcast is truly inspiring and proves useful and entertaining for both mothers and others alike. I absolutely love it." Thank you, pretty good guy 154.
Those are kind words.
I love it.
I'm glad that we're putting useful things into this world.
Absolutely. So please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and rate us and review. We will probably at some point read your review. So leave your name too and we can give you a shout out. Like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our website, www.mamabeardarespodcast.com, for the complete show notes to this episode, as well as all of our other episodes. you'll see links to the creative collective that Amy and Leslie have started and is booming in downtown Davenport. And you can also find our email there if you have a mama bear in your life who you think we and the mama bear community needs to know about. Until then, have an awesome day, mama bears.
Have a great day, mama bears. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Flip out.